The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love in Sarah's kitchen.
Welcome one and all to the DL Debate, the last in the series of 2020, show number 40. What a year it's been, crazy year. It's been a crazy year for me personally. A lot of things to learn the first time I've hosted a show, and I want to thank everybody that's tuned in and listened and all the feedback. And well, thanks so much to all my guests and all the input of people around the country. I've had a phenomenal response to the show. I'd just like to thank people who contributed, the likes of John Harn, Barry Meehan, the Highland team here, Brendan Kilcoyne, Martin McHugh, Oisin, of course, Paul Campbell in the hurling. We've had some fantastic guests, you know, from life stories, from the likes of our 92 heroes and 2012 heroes. And from the likes of Peter Canavan, Kieran Whelan, David Brady, Enda McGinley, DJ Kerry was on the show, you know, Top Ref, Pat McEnany, Desi Farrell, you know, with a host of top journalists, you know, both local here and national, the likes of Funny Man, Impressionist, Aidan Tierney, all coming on and inputting into the show. It's been fantastic. So thanks very much to everyone who's listened throughout the year. On tonight's show, the guests keep rolling. As I say, we've got Mayo's David Brady coming on to analyse All-Ireland Final. We have Chief Sports Writer with the Star, Kieran Cunningham, on the line. But first up, we have the man that guided Dublin to six in a row, Dublin manager Desi Farrell.
It was a very, very different year in so many ways, you know, and just delighted for the players that we were able to get over the line on Saturday night there. We knew it was going to be a very tough game against Mayo, to be fair, and they always put it up to us and go toe-to-toe, and just very, very thankful that we got out the other side of it, Brendan, to be honest.
And Desi, tell me, there's pressure in all county management, and I was thinking about yourself when you took the job. There's a very different pressure attached to it. Of course, Dublin, the most high-profile team in the country, but also there was this winning run that you had to keep going. How did that feel about you taking over the job? Because everyone was looking at then, was there a chink there? Was there a time that Dublin mightn't be what they were? And funny, I spoke to Kieran Whelan last week, and I said, listen, knowing Desi and knowing you, how you knew all these players, if anything, Dublin were going to be better this season.
Yeah, look, Jim Gavin and his management team had done a phenomenal job over the last number of years. So there was always that to contend with, that success that had been there. But it just, to be honest, it didn't really engage with that. It was more, for me, it was more about the players and, you know, getting to reunite with some of those lads that I'd coached, some of them actually from under 12, under 13 development squads right through to under 21. It was fantastic to have that opportunity, and I feel very honoured for that have come my way. And so to me, it was all about the players and, you know, trying to create that environment where they could be the best version of themselves, and, you know, hopefully through that, the success would continue.
Yeah, well, you certainly did that. Desi, just on about that, I didn't realise you had them from such a young age, some of these players. Tell me, do you think that's a template for teams going forward? I know Declan Bonner went back here to Donegal under 16s and worked with players right the way through and then came into seniors and had a success. Of course, we didn't get a poppy this year. We missed out on that one, Desi. But you think that's a great way to come into a county team, to go down to underage and build it right through to senior?
Well, seems to have worked in Dublin, you know, and it's I know there's a lot of talk about resources and everything else, but for me, the sort of that narrative is a little bit lost, that it's actually about getting good people in at the earliest age to work for players and develop them, you know. And, you know, I was just one of many who have had their hand and fingerprints on this great Dublin team, you know, over the last 10 years or whatever, and getting good coaches in, and there have been, fortunately, many great volunteers have come in to help with that work in Dublin over the last decade or 20 years, perhaps even it's gone back that far, you know. And it is important, I think, the coaching, getting the basics right, getting the philosophy right at that stage is important, and that's just about getting good people in. And the county board facilitated that in many ways, and, you know, there's an emphasis on trying to attract the talent in at the earliest stage to develop the players that are going to be the players of the future.
So Desi, you were sitting back watching some of these players that you had helped mature and mould into the players that they were in Jim Gavin's team, of course a proud Dublin man yourself. You must have been still in the background itching, listen, I want to take control of this senior team, I want to go in and keep this going and one another All-Ireland. That must have been, when a chance came up then, you were like, right, let's go, I want this job.
Well, I don't think it was probably ever like that for me. It was obviously great to see those players do so well, and obviously Jim and the management team at the time over the last number of years did a great job themselves. So just delighted to see them express themselves in the way they did and sort of fulfil that potential. When the job came up and Jim stepped away, then it was... It was a big decision, of course it was, but I've been passionate about Gaelic games all my life, loved the sport, and I love coaching players and working with players in that way. You know, it's the next best thing, as you probably know yourself, when you have to retire or move away from the game itself as a player, it's great to be involved and stay involved, and I'm passionate about coaching and trying to develop players in that way, and just the opportunity came up and I said, yeah, sure, why not?
Definitely, why not? Desi, you had the credentials. Desi, tell me, everybody of course was rooting for the underdog outside of Dublin on Saturday evening's game, but there was a few houses in Donegal. Right about Glencombe Kill would have been cheering your boys on.
Yeah, that's right, of course, and obviously the mother is from Crov in Carrick there, and large family in that neck of the woods, and I've spent all my summers up in that beautiful part of the world, and have a real deep connection there, love the place, still go back with my own family as often as we can, and not sure whether we'll get up over the Christmas with this lockdown situation, but I love it up there and love the people up there, and they've been very good to me over the years, and that'll never be forgotten.
Yeah, magic stuff. Desi, just the season that it was, through the National League, the league's a league, you know, you just kind of, you know, get through it, you want to stay in Division 1. I don't think there's not that many teams are really that worried about actually winning the competition. But just going into Leinster then, Desi, just keeping the lads motivated, is it just workmanlike then, you know, preparing for what's coming down the tracks?
Yeah, it was, I think for us, with the disruption this year, it was difficult to sort of get that sort of momentum that you might have been looking for, you know, and trying to work on things on the training ground, you know, the games, when we got back to it, the games were coming hot and heavy, and there was definitely challenges around that, you know, but when we got into championship mode, though, you could see that a shift in attitude from the players, which was great, and they really knuckled down and sort of started to work really hard and go after the things we were trying to go after, and you know, the idea of building momentum is hugely important in games itself, but over a period it's of weeks and months, it's very important too, and that started to happen for us, which was great, and sort of fed into the weekend's performance, I think, you know.
And tell me, Desi, after Donegal played Armagh, were you starting to do a wee bit of homework on us?
Yeah, no, I was, because of the connection and whatever, I was very, very aware of what's happening up there football-wise, and definitely there was a great team there and is a great team, and, you know, the Ulster final was unfortunate. I do think Donegal played below par that day. I think that's an obvious enough statement, and probably will rue the missed opportunity maybe and going further, but they're definitely a force to be reckoned with for 2021.
Yeah, it was just such a pity that game didn't happen. Yeah, Donegal got to lick the wounds and go back. Desi, just on the game on Saturday evening, then of course the weirdness of an All-Ireland final with no crowds and that, but again, looking at Dublin and everything you've said about them and how workmanlike and how their performance level seems to stay always at a certain level, Desi, and then you've got brilliant bench to bring in. You just, whatever happens in the first half, it looks like you go on, you assess, you know, even the likes of Mayo squeezing up in kickouts and how they were bringing their running game to you and how they had really thrown the kitchen sink at you in the first half. It's as if at half time you come in, you assess, and then you really start to put your stamp and really start to squeeze Dublin.
It wasn't. We were expecting that from Mayo, and to be fair to them, they've always gone toe to toe with Dublin over the years, and in any of the finals that have been played previously in the last number of years, there's been the smallest of margins between the teams. So we were expecting nothing different. We were expecting that sort of high octane level of intensity that they brought on Saturday night, and it was good, definitely good to get in at half time and sort of assess what was going on, and obviously there was the black card situation to deal with just after that, and try to maybe fix one or two things, or you know, chat about one or two things, and come out and basically let the lads do what they do then in the second half. You know, they're an experienced bunch, and they've been in these situations before, and while some adjustments were made, you know yourself what it's like, Brendan, you throw it over to the players then at that point and see what they can do.
Yeah, Desi, like, I didn't have much hope that the black card was going to have a huge impact, Desi, simply because your defence is so well organised. You know, every time Mayo were coming forward, there was at least two, if not three players in that central D position, which meant there was going to be no goal chances, really. And when you broke up the pitch, there seemed to be that space you were creating in the middle, which was the big difference. You know, obviously it happened in the first 13 seconds, the goal, and even Conn's goal, the 1-2 inside, bang. That space just didn't seem to be in your defence. That's why I wasn't overly worried about the black card from your perspective. You have such a great organisation as a collective in your 45 to not give up much space and not give away goal chances, which was probably, Desi, people talk about the goals scored, you know, the goals not conceded or your defence really was the platform for this victory.
No, I agree with you. That was significant for sure, and I wouldn't agree with you on the black card. We were quite well. You might have been comfortable enough, I can assure you. We were quite nervous.
I was sitting on my couch, Desi, with a couple of cold ones, so I was very comfortable.
it was definitely a concern for us, you know, because to be fair to Mayo, they had been pressing us really high and putting that squeeze on, and while we'd gone in 2 points up, we were definitely under the cosh at times, and then with the extra man, we just thought that they were going to come really hard at us at 10 minutes, and we'd try and figure a way to manage that period and manage our way through that 10-minute spell. And I think we did that quite well, and probably set us up then to, that was a platform to kick on and win the match in the end, you know.
Yeah, I thought that platform, Desi, for me, just the Howard's outside the boot point, I was like, wow. You know, this guy comes off the bench and had sad. And that's no disrespect for Mayo, I just couldn't see anybody on their side doing something similar. And of course, Mannion comes on as well. I mean, Desi, most teams, I think, in Ireland would build a forward line around Mannion. And you have these guys to inject, to come in. You know, it is a frightening team.
Yeah, and look, there were some big calls maybe in terms of team selection and keeping some of those quality players on the bench. But you know, we felt at the start of the year it was important for the team to continue to evolve, and if there was any stagnation, because, you know, while they've been very successful, some of those games have been won in finals by the closest of margins. So there was definitely a need to evolve, and we identified that at the start, and part of that was bringing in new players, of course, and giving them the sort of opportunity and having confidence in some of those lads as well to keep the thing fresh and keep everyone on their toes and keep the whole thing energised, you know. So it was that was definitely probably somewhat controversial, if I could say. So it was great though to see the attitude of those lads who potentially may have felt they should have been starting or had been contributed so much as a starting player over the previous number of years, and to see them come on and how they went about their business all year was fantastic, you know.
Yeah, it just looks like the collective, the group, everyone is so in tune together, and you just kept that going. For me, I think you probably freshened it and upped it again. So God help us into 2021. Desi, on the celebrations now, what happens? Can you still kick it off as a team? You just have to be in your own place. You have been all together as a group. So how does that work now? I suppose it's very difficult to know where to go and what to do with the cup.
It is for me. Getting up to Donegal in the next week will be brilliant at some point in time. That's what I'd like to do. It's been low-key, to be honest, because of what's happening around us. You know, the trajectory of the virus obviously isn't great at the minute, and we've been conscious of that all year, trying to stay safe and protect each other. And you know, obviously, on the final whistle and the whole thing is over, it'd be fantastic for fellas to be able to celebrate in the way, because they put in so much hard work and effort throughout the year. That's part and parcel of it. But this year it's different, and you know, everyone has to be careful and mind themselves. And you know, on Saturday night we just went for food, and everybody went home to their own families and did what they needed to do with their families. So it's been very low key. There hasn't been much since, to be honest. You know, please God, in the right way, in a safe way, in the months ahead, we might get to have a night out together or do something to mark the occasion, for sure. But it's low key, Brendan. Yeah.
Just be careful when you bring in the salmon. We might take this the wrong way, Desi, if you come down on holidays to Glencombe Kill. But you're always welcome, Desi. Just finally, before you go, you've obviously matched some of the records of your friends in Kerry there, and next year the opportunity is there for a few players to really create history and go into the 9-medal category. It seems unbelievable, Desi, but that's the target next season, and you'll be, of course, installed as favourites right from the off.
Yeah, that's probably the case. We'll be installed as favourites, but look, we don't look at the 6 in a row or the 7 in a row. You know, that's not spoken about. Medals aren't spoken about. It's just about enjoying playing football, enjoying being together as a group, and trying to be the best that we can. And hopefully that's the sort of ethos we'll go into next season with. You know, and there's massive challenges ahead from the Donegals and the Kerrys and the Mayos again, and we're under no illusions as to how difficult it'll be, and we look forward to it nonetheless.
Brilliant, Desi. Listen, you're a great GA man, and I want to thank you so much for taking the time out there. I know you have a busy schedule talking to us this evening on the DL debate. I'll catch up with you soon, sir. Again, congratulations.
Great to talk to you, Brendan.
Thanks, Desi.
Have a great Christmas.
And now we're going to discuss the year that was 2020 and into 21 with my man Cunningham, chief sports writer with The Star. Kieran Cunningham joins me this evening. How are you, Kieran?
Not too bad, but Brendan, not too bad.
Good man, Kieran. First things first, are you driving home for Christmas, or what are you doing?
Well, at the moment it doesn't look like it. Like generally we stay here for Christmas and try and go for New Year, but we'll have to play it by ear and see what the story is with travel restrictions.
Yeah.
It might have to be a wee bit later in January, but we'll just see how it goes over the next few days.
It's difficult at the minute. Funny, Kieran, I just spoke to Desi Farrell earlier in the show, and he was mad to get down to your home place in Glen as well, but wasn't sure. I said, I'm not too sure about you bringing the Sam or not. It mightn't go down that well, but...
we'd always be glad to see Sam. It's always a bit of a welcome for Desi.
Of course.
It's the first silverware to go into Glen in a while, so we'll blame it. So.
Well, you're getting close there now, the intermediate, I tell you. You're getting close, huh? Kieran, just a crazy year that it was, but it finished up with a bit of normality in terms of the Dublin machine. Kieran, was there ever any doubt?
Not because of the way the championship was set up, Brendan, to be honest. I think Kerry, you know, when the likes of Kerry, Tyrone, Galway went out early, Donegal went out relatively early, and when you had no back door, you know, you did end up with two very one-sided semi-finals. Mm. You know, you had Mayo, who, you know, with a lot of new players, like against Galway, for example, they had 10 newcomers this year, you know, a lot of newcomers. Mm. You know, they ended up in the final, and you know, even though they were competitive for a lot of the final, they're not the team they were a few years ago. You know, and it was noteworthy. Like Oisín Mullen, I thought played well, and Conor Callaghan, like it was a great battle between the two of them. wouldn't know there's an issue with him. He might well go to Aussie Rules. But other than that, they were leaning very heavily on the fellas that had been there a long time. Killeen O'Connor, you know, Lee Keegan, Chris Barrett, you know. Mm. You know, like, I wouldn't be putting the mortgage on Mayo being back there anytime soon, even though they've been a lot of new players, you know. And I do think a Kerry at full strength, a Donegal at full strength, a Tyrone at full strength, they would have given Dublin more of the game.
Mm.
But even though there's a feeling of inevitability about Dublin winning it, I'm not sure they're as good as they were, you know, really not, because one of the things you look at, every year Dublin have brought in new players, you know, and they bring in a Fenton, Brian Fenton, or Con O'Callaghan, or Brian Howard, or Paul Mannion. They were all really good players. But you look at the new players they brought in this year, Robbie McDade, John Bugler, Paddy Small, Tom Lahiff, the midfield played most of the games. You know, they're all good inter-county players, but none of them are at the level of the newcomers that came in the other years.
Hmm.
Like, maybe this will come back to bite me, you know, that they'll prove they are, but...
Yeah.
I don't think they are, you know. Like, to me, you know, as Robbie McDade made a bigger impact than Pat O'Morgan did for Donegal, for example, at wing back. You know, so, you know, we can't paint these fellas up as supermen. You know, they have five or six, you know, the likes of James McCarthy and Cluxton, Brian Fenton, Kieran Kilkenny, Con O'Callaghan. You know, there's a core there, some of the best players we've ever seen.
But is it a collective, though, Kieran? Is it a thing where it doesn't really matter, you know, because you've got Howard to come on, you've got Mannion to come on? I mean, most teams would build the forward line around Mannion.
Yeah, but they're all going on. No, time does go on.
Mm.
I don't see that the new fellas coming in, I don't think they're all at the level.
Well, I get your point,
like,
I get your point.
The likes of Johnny Cooper, Mick Fitzsimons, they're in that defence, you know, for 10 years now. Billy McMahon, you know, he slipped out of it, but he was about to come on the weekend. He's there for 10 years now in defence. Stephen Cluxton's 39 there.
Mm.
You know, so there is kind of thing. Like, if you were to do a combined Donegal-Dublin team, you would put at least five of the Donegal players on that team, if not six. And another two or three would be pushing very close. And the same applies for Tyrone or Kerry. So, you know, I think you can get spooked by an aura. Like, you saw that with Manchester United for years with Alex Ferguson. Like, their record, Old Trafford in particular. But when he's gone, everybody started winning Old Trafford.
Mm.
You know, so the aura goes. There's an aura built up with Dublin now. A lot of teams are beaten before they take the field. And, you know, that's one of the things that gives to Mayo. Mayo have never bought into that. Like, Mayo have always felt they could beat them, even though they haven't beaten us since 2012. You know, they've always put it up to them. And, like, I would love Donegal to go to door-to-door, but I think the way, you know, you do need everybody, because you say they're able to bring on the likes of Mannion Howard. So Donegal would need, you know, Conor Morris and Kieran Gillespie, Oran McNeilish even, fellas that haven't been around, because they have such a panel, like, you know, such depth there. Like, even, you know, they've 20, at least 20, if not 25, you know, between great and good inter-county players. Mm. You know, whereas other, you know, some of them aren't at the level of the others, but, you know, other to match that is very hard. Like, Donegal might come up with 12 on a day. You know, but you're going to need 17 or 18. And that was the big difference on Saturday. The bench was the difference. Mayo got absolutely nothing off their bench.
Yep.
You know, whereas Dublin's bench, and they've seen it again and again, wins them the games, the big games.
But can sometimes, if we're analysing this deep into Dublin, is it their fault because it's so easy for them at times that we maybe don't see the team or some of those players maybe peaking, because they really don't have to? It's almost as if in the first half, you know, they're never going to be... They never seem to be behind the enemy, but they just suss out teams. I mean, even how Mayo had pushed up in their kick out and it really put the squeeze in them, it's as if once they got back to 15, they really turned the screw back on Mayo and started to really strangle them.
I'd give Mayo a bit more credit as well, though. You know, like, Mayo has shipped two hammer blows with the goals, you know, particularly the early goal, and the response to the first goal was brilliant. Like, the 3 points on the board, and, you know, within 2 minutes, I think, after. You know, that was a great response. And, you know, the defend for the second goal was very poor as well, the way that they let Conor Callan go. So, you know, Dublin got, you know, a lot of those Dublin Mayo games. Like, Mayo, I've only seen, I never saw a known goal in the All-Ireland final until the one where Mayo had two own goals.
Mm.
You know, so you can have really bad luck. And Mayo, Dublin have benefited from those breaks. And they benefited from refereeing decisions at the weekend. There's no getting away from that. Like, Mick Fitzsimons, the challenge on Lee Keegan.
Mm.
Lee Keegan wasn't the same after that. It wasn't shoulder to shoulder.
It wasn't
the chest. And there's an argument as well that Johnny Cooper should have been black carded. So, you know, you do need breaks. And Dublin have got the breaks on a fair amount of cases. It's not down to luck, obviously, just that they're winning. No, they're an outstanding team and a unit if you keep doing that. And, you know, to move from Pat Gilroy to Jim Gavin, Desi Farrell, you don't really notice, you know, that they just keep on keeping on. Yeah. So, but, you know, people say they won 10 in a row or, you know, that nobody's ever going to win again except maybe a Kerry. I actually don't accept that. I think, you know, there's signs there that, you know, where's the next James McCarthy coming from? Like, James McCarthy had been an immense player, you know. Mm. So, you know, they were in the last two under-20 finals, but looking at them, the best players are a couple of forwards like Kieran Archer. I don't see outstanding Dublin players coming through in defence or midfield at the moment.
So what you're saying then, Kieran, is that these new group of players coming through, you know, aren't at the level of, say, the likes of Coopers or Fentons or Kilkennys. They're fitting in seamlessly now, but in the future they mightn't be that type of side to the level that they're at now.
Yeah, they're still going to win All Ireland. I think because of the structures Dublin have, you know, all the advantages, you know, people in Dublin don't like being brought up, but there are advantages there. Like, and one of the most important is being close to training. Like, that makes a huge deal, a huge difference. But because, like, they're always going to be around the last, they're always been the last four. I think it'd be very, very unusual that they're not in an All-Ireland semi-final. And most of the time they will be in the final. But they're not going to be winning every single All-Ireland. Like, some people are, you know, have a doomsday scenario that nobody's ever going to win it again except Dublin and maybe a Kerry. But, you know, I don't see that. Like, you look at Tyrone now with new management. You know, Conor McKenna with a league behind him. Derek Hanavan in there. The other Canavan, Rury, was Tyrone Minor's best player against Donegal the weekend. You know, that Tyrone won't be a million miles away. And
Cal McShane back.
Yeah, absolutely. And Donegal, when they get everybody battling, Donegal were really, you know, you can point to different reasons why they lost the Ulster final, but losing a few, you know, I think it did come back to haunt them, the players they lost in defence. Mm. You know, but if Donegal are close to full strength, Donegal are still a very competitive team. And Kerry just, you know, Kerry beat themselves against Cork. Yeah. There's no getting away from that. Like, and Kerry are able to put it up to Dublin. So I think it's a bit more competitive than we might think. Like, no, when you're sitting here now looking at a 7 in a row, you're thinking it's a one-horse race. But I think that could change a bit in the next couple of years.
Well, that's the first bit of positivity, Kieran. I'm glad to hear that. And if you say it, hey, I believe in you. Kieran, just like around that, you know, you said about Ireland and the likes of Old Trafford. Now, I mean, ourselves in Balbuffet with a 10-year record there. Mm. You know, we haven't lost since. And I'm just thinking, like, that Donegal are no Dublin. Again, so you've all these small things that are adding up. And again, I mean, I wasn't going to say it to Desi. He half mentioned something about resources. I didn't even want to go on date with him. I mean, they've won All Ireland now, and good luck to them. But there's so many things when it comes down to those. You know, we talk about the small games, the games of inches. Everything matters. And as you said, the training being close, the backup, the supports, you know, and of course now people are throwing things that the Dubs are nearly professional, etc., etc. It's put a bit of a cloud on the championship for me, Kieran, around it. Do you feel that, like, this dominance, not only as a dominating team, but also as everybody then starts to throw up the resources, I think there's a bit of a cloud hanging over the whole championship, and the excitement that used to be in it isn't really there because of it?
Well, without a doubt, like, it wasn't a good championship. You know, I don't think anybody could say it was. You know, it's been dressed up because of what Cavan and Tipperary did. And it was brilliant what they did. Like, that was an amazing Sunday. It's one of the, you know, there's been very few Sundays like that in the history of the GA, when you had two major breakthroughs like that on counties that really, you know, were it was very unexpected that we'd get them. But, you know, I didn't enjoy the championship. I'll be perfectly honest. I thought it was, you know, a pale shadow of what it normally is. And the main reason is no supporters. You really need supporters. I think it's, you know, playing in the winter isn't ideal, but the biggest difference was nobody being in the grounds. Like, and even, like, it's interesting, you know, in the build-up to Dublin Mayo at the weekend, you know, they were showing other Dublin Mayo games. And a couple of years ago, if you remember Lee Keegan's goal, in the final, you know, Aidan O'Shea set it up, get through the middle. And just the noise from the Mayo crowd, you kind of forget, Jesus, you know, the lift that gives you and the buzz you get off it. Mm. Whereas if you were at these games, you know, you get it on TV, but being at them, It wasn't, you know, it was a very hollow experience, you know, sitting there in an empty stadium, you know, and it's just that you do need supporters. Like, the GAA is rooted in the community, and you need the community to be there. Like, you see Limerick winning last week, if Waterford had won the hurling, imagine what that would have been like if they were able to have a proper homecoming.
Yes.
But then when you can't have that, like, it's all, you know, it's great that they got it done, and the GAA deserve credit for getting it done, because I didn't think there would be championships. But it was kind of ticking a box to me. It wasn't anything like the real thing.
Yeah, well, if you had been in at the Ulster final, the noise that that 50 or so Cavan people made was phenomenal, Ciarán. I'll tell you, it was unreal. Ciarán, just looking, like, in 1997, an amateur status report proposed that central pooling of resources were to be allocated to all the counties. You know, individual sponsorship was going to be going into Croke Park as a pool, and it was opposed by Dublin and Cork. So it suited the bigger counties, and again, goes back to this core thing of GAA that is becoming, because of all the money has flooded in now, how do you then divvy it up? You know, what's your feeling on that? Does there need to be a pooling of resources and then it passed out? I mean, a lot of people talked about the kind of commuter belt to Louth, Kildare, you know, Meath, etc., pumping money in there, etc. But again, do we just need a spread around the country?
Well, I think there's going to be huge pressure to do something, like a huge pressure on the GAA top brass to address this, because, you know, you can bring up all sorts of reasons why Dublin, you know, people say, oh, you split Dublin, or Pat Gilroy said you amalgamate other counties or whatever. But the main issue with Dublin isn't GAA one, it's a demographic and social change. So by 2030, by the end of this decade, it's estimated 40%, you know, that's not far off half, 40% of the country's population will be in Dublin. So how do you compete with that? Like, it's going to be very, very difficult. And there's a very interesting demographic and social change in that GAA have become very middle-class games in Dublin for all sorts of reasons, because, you know, if people from the country moved to Dublin, done well, their kids are going, you know, you know, they want their kids to be GAA because that's what they're rooted in, even though it might be because the schools they go to might have gravitated towards rugby in the past. And also there's a move away from rugby because there's huge fears with parents about concussion, about the concussion issue and the long-term impact of that. And where the middle class goes, money follows. You know, that's why, if you look on the Cooler website, the Coolers and Docky, and even though, you know, they don't have their own ground, they have a list of sponsors, and it looks like a list of Premier League sponsors. Like, it's big. A few multinational companies there. So they can attract Dublin clubs, and Dublin as a brand can attract the kind of money that other counties can't dream of. So to have some kind of level playing field, I think there will be huge pressure to have some kind of pool. Even if you allow Dublin, say, you can keep 60% of your sponsorship deal, but 40% is distributed around the other counties. You know, I think they will have to try and do something. Because if you have 40% of the country, in one county, you know, how can you have a system like the only way other than that is to break up the inter-county system? And I think there'd be huge resistance to that, because people are so, the identity is rooted in your club and your county. And like, how would you feel about, you know, cheering for a combined Donegal Tyrone team or Donegal Derry team? Or,
well, that would be a difficult one to swallow, Ciarán. Ciarán, listen, brilliant points as ever, and listen, hope you get that spin down to Glencombe-Killett at some stage to the home place. And again, thanks so much for all throughout the year, and definitely hope to speak to you in 21.
No problem, Brendan. Happy Christmas. Thanks
very much, sir. Cheers. Bye. And now this crazy story of Mayo football continues, and I wanted to get someone who knows this Mayo team and the Mayo game inside out. It is former Mayo legend himself, now top pundit, David Brady. Welcome to the show, David.
Brendan, buddy, how's things?
I'm the very... Good to hear your voice, my man. Good to hear your voice. David, thanks very much for coming on. I imagine at the minute it's one of those kind of doom and gloom, what if, might be a couple of days again.
Yeah, could be, should be, and wasn't to be. But let me tell you, Brendan, I've been seeing a lot of days like this and that from a Mayo perspective, whether it's as a player or as a supporter now. But I have to say, I am a little bit more optimistic than I ever was, I suppose, coming out of All-Ireland. And I suppose optimistic is the word I use, because it's about looking into the future. I think there's definitely potential for these a lot of these players to grow and learn from, I suppose, Saturday evening's defeat to Dublin.
Yeah, David, I mean, it's so hard to quantify now, David. I felt it was a couple of years with Mayo there, particularly when they came so close, and people keep saying they're the only team to put it up to Dublin. There's almost like we have to, you know, realign what we think of the championship. There's this huge cloud of Dublin hanging over the championship, and everyone's talking resources, etc. And then there's only certain teams can seem to really put it up to them. And certainly in that first half or first three quarters of the game, Mayo did that. And as you said, they had, what, six guys playing their first All-Ireland final. There was a lot of positives in the game, David. And somehow, like, no one was expecting them to win. And I know it's still heartbreak to lose a final, but you see enough signs there that this team could grow and get better and come back for another tilt.
Look, without a doubt, and as you said, the six players that played in the All-Ireland final for the first time was coupled with a lot of experience as well. And I think the new introduction of young players, the likes of, you know, Oisin Mullen, I thought was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah.
Outstanding. And look at the likes of Owen McLaughlin then coming from the half-back. I had quite enough day. Tommy Connolly in the corner forward position. Had a quiet enough day as well. And I definitely know the potential of these guys, and it's going to be there in the future. But look, let's be honest and simple. You'll only go forward by learning from your mistakes in the past, and that's what we all need to do. And look at it, when you think about it, since they started all this, right, they've appeared in six All Ireland finals in 8 years, right? And that's including the replays. And in those games, the opposition's first scorer was a goal. Now that's something that you say, right? Does it happen by accident, or other teams pointing as a weakness and they own it? And it happened again after 13 seconds. If you go back to Michael Murphy's goal in the third minute in 2012, so that's, you know, and there's times when Dean Rock scored the other night, but then again Conor Callaghan took 83 seconds in 2017. They need to get a little bit smarter, I think, from an organisational point of view. They have a fantastic manager in James Horton, but it's a simple thing. And they made Dublin, and the words being used, like, I don't know, look very normal. And Dublin are normal, because you're human beings at the end of the day. Dublin, the pressure that was exerted by Mayo, made Dublin make mistakes that we haven't seen them. There was ball turned over. They were giving away easy dispossessions. And they were shooting some, what you would call, easy wides from a Dublin perspective. But that was from the pressure that Mayo put on, and the template is, if you haven't got it, it's hard, but you have to go man on man with Dublin. There was no zonal defence, there was no zonal system at all. It was man on man. And look at the reality is, if you have a man like Conor Callaghan and you make a slip or an error of judgement, he's gone, and he can really hammer home that advantage, which he did with his goal on Saturday night. But at the end of the day, you need what Mayo didn't have. We didn't have a bench experienced or strong enough. And again, experience is a lot of the guys that I blame, the likes of Jordan Flynn, James Durkin, James Carr, are young, and that experience will stand to them. But they didn't have it from an All Ireland final quarter where Mayo really, really needed it. And that was the difference. The benches from Dublin, Brian Howard come on at the first minute. I think that was kind of an introduction. You bring on a substitute at half-time, you get the opportunity to integrate them into the team plan in the dressing room, what you want them to do, especially when Dublin were down, a man with a black card. And I think we probably waited until the 15 minutes of the second half. Maybe we might look back and say we could have made them changes one or two at half-time.
Yeah. And David, you speak about Horan, a great manager, Ned. He was quoted before he came back to the job saying, listen, I know what we did wrong before, we have to right those wrongs. But, you know, as you're saying, this continual, does there not have to be some blame laying the door on him about these early goals?
Well, look, I have to say, everyone takes the blame. It's from preparation or identification of it or prevention. That's the big thing. Very simple. Like, that didn't just happen by accident. And it hasn't happened by accident in a lot of circumstances. We've seen Merchant doing the same thing after half-time last year against Curry. When I played midfield, it was always the thing is, one man goes up, one man stays down on the defensive side. Don't get caught flat-footed, because you can defend straight away if you lose the kick-out. But we were in a situation where we were caught flat-footed. James McCarthy showed a pair of heels to Aidan O'Shea, and the rest just is what is done on the training pitch. You swarm, you sweep, and you create a an avenue, or you create a clear path for a guy going down the middle. And yes, it's something that that's very simplistic, but we shouldn't have caught it. And the blame lies on everyone. From management to players to not identify that.
Yeah, I just felt the Dublin centre, if you think around that D, every time you come forward, there seemed to be two or three players in that zone. So even to get a shot away was difficult, but there didn't seem to be any avenue to get in for goals. And of course, that first goal, Mayo responded brilliantly, three great points. And even though they were level then, I always get the feeling, well, they've just done three brilliant things in the game and it's just level again now. You expect then, of course, Dublin might have a patch. But the second goal, I think, was a bit disappointing. I mean, Killian O'Connor right back there, you know, it's a 1-2 O'Callaghan and Scully, I think it was. There's three Mayo defenders and there's two Dublin forwards, but yet the Dublin guy ends 1-1. And even the fisted shot itself, you know, it could have very easily hit David Clark. But I felt the second goal was a bit of a hammer blow and it just gave Dublin that bit of a cushion that they were never going to relinquish.
You know what? And that's exactly it. It was a cushion. And once Dublin create that cushion, they dictate the terms of the game after that. And it did from a footballing perspective. And again, when you're in, Mayo have played a deeper defensive strategy from their attacking full forward line, like Aidan O'Shea, Tommy Conroy, and Killian coming back. And then you're kind of, it's nearly a zonal. You're really trying to defend wherever the ball is, and you're going from pillar to post. But once you're attracted, Dublin do have that capability of stripping the ball over the top, or creating the 2-on-1s then from it. If we've seen that going again, and it was safe to take, you'd say that Conor Callan took the absolute wrong decision, but that's the skill and the capability of the man. But again, Dublin, when you're playing a team of the quality of Dublin, they're always going to have their dominant periods. And they definitely, look at, the game was there in the mental part. Mm. If you look at it, and we're all kind of expecting Dublin to pull away, but we all got within a point in the second half. There was about 45 minutes gone in the game, 50 minutes, and you have to create some sort of momentum from that. I think a major turning point could have been, I'm not saying it was, but it could have been the foul on Lee Keegan when he was nearly cutting two with a shoulder.
Yes.
That was 20 yards. That was 20 yards away from the goal. If that happened around the middle of the pitch, 1,000% it was going to be a free. But I think from the refereeing, Goldrick definitely got it wrong. But that could have been, that would have levelled it up. That would have put the momentum with Mayo, and you wouldn't know. And look, we do dare and dream and think that might have happened. But I think that was a crucial turning point. Lee had no influence in the game after that. He was, anyone else, I don't think would have stayed on the pitch by Lee Keegan. But if you had a crowd, 83,000, you don't know, you know, that helps. And I had the honour of being in Crow Park on Saturday night working at it. And it was just, it was surreal. And I found it hard to even, you know, to get it absorbed into the game, because it's so unrealistic and unlike what we're all used to. But let me tell you, the All-Ireland final itself, it made a lot of people very, very, I suppose, equal. A lot of mistakes, uncharacteristic of Dublin as well. But then what they needed to do in the final 20 minutes, they did with aplomb, and that's their experience, their skill. I suppose their game management is excellent also.
Yes, certainly. You know, for years, I suppose, David, there has been this thing thrown at the Mayo about, you know, this marquee forward term. I mean, Killian O'Connor has been absolutely superhuman this championship, and was again in the final. And after coming in with such a heavy score behind him in the semi, you always think what will happen for him. And listen, he's such a kind of like a professional athlete, how he does things. Really, David, this came down to not being able to get goals, you know, and not being able to keep Dublin out at the back. And I suppose that's the big issue, is these goals are tilting the game against Mayo every time. I mean, as I say, Killian was brilliant. Is it that thing inside where you just need that some bit of a pace or ingenuity or somebody bombing through from the centre that's going to open things up and create those goal chances? I mean, it's hard to quantify V. Tipperary in the semi-final. There was chances galore, but it just didn't seem to happen, and that was the big thing on Saturday evening. If Mayo would even get one at any of those pivotal stages, it could have been what ignited them to go on and win the game.
Definitely, and there wasn't even a sniff of an opportunity for goal from Mayo perspective or from Mayo play. We tried one or two balls direct into Aidan O'Shea where they were kind of floating across the parallelograms or working in the, what you'd call the danger zone. If you pick and turn, you're on goal. He wasn't necessarily in a scenario like that. Probably didn't help us that a lot of us, again, as a forward division, was a lot deeper. We didn't have a focal point or a fulcrum in the danger zone from a goal-scoring perspective. And again, for a team not to concede a goal, am I right? In the whole championship, Dublin, it's just phenomenal. From an individual perspective, but it's also from a collective defensive unit. And you have that athleticism and skill from the James McCarthy's and the Brian Fentons and the Brian Howards to sit back and help control the defensive zone. And maybe we're going to start seeing the clock ticking down to when was the last time Dublin conceded a goal, because with the units and the formation they have, it could be a while longer.
And David, tell me, Division 2 next year, it's probably not that big of an issue. The leagues are going to be split up in that. How's things in Mayo generally? You know, the club and the underage coaching structures and that. Is there a good system there at the moment?
There is a very good system. And again, there's a lot of talent coming through from again, under-17s, minor-20s, and the underage teams. Again, I would say that the financial burden of a system like that, we have four games promotion offers in Mayo to cover, and it was very much like Donegal, to cover a vast area with its schools, or, you know, I think that's a major negative. Your geographic area is so massive that you have guys, four games promotion offers split between all this geographical area, a couple of schools, national schools, secondary schools, and county teams. I think it's, from my own perspective, the one worry I would have, and it's nearly, people are going, they will be grand in Division 2, they'll come up next year. Anytime anyone plays against Mayo, let me tell you, they have a chance. And we've seen it over the past that a lot of the teams that have got demoted from Division 1 have beaten Mayo. I remember Cavan distinctly beating Mayo. You have Monaghan beating Mayo. You have the lesser teams beating Mayo, and I'd be afraid that Mayo will come down. They'll always play good against the best, but they'll always play average against the rest. And I hope they don't drop the performances, because there's going to be, again, there's going to be a challenge for them to get promotion. But I wouldn't like to see a scenario where the first one or two games could be from an All-Ireland hangover in February, and you could be in the middle of saying, oh my God, what is unthinkable that
we all
could go to Division 3.
Yeah. I think when it comes down to it, then you would pull it out of the hat, David. Well, you know, it is ups and downs of Mayo. Like, anything's possible with Mayo. You capsulate that great that, you know, against the smaller teams, they don't necessarily do it, and you think, you know, how many teams have been written off, yet there they were on Saturday night at the pinnacle game again, you know, and maybe not coming in with a team that was at its strongest compared to maybe a couple of seasons ago when they seemed to be really at their powers. New team coming through, as you say, David, lots of possibilities, and who's to know where this Mayo story is going to end up, you know. I think all us neutrals out here were rooting for you on Saturday night, and Some states, David, I think, as we get across the line. God knows when that'll be, but I'm sure you'll be a happy man when that gets done.
As someone said to me on Saturday night, and I wasn't long shutting them down, they kind of go, sure, look at, sure, if we won it, what would we have to live for? And I go, you know what, I'm sick of living the way we are. I want to win it once. And it's like everything else. Dublin are dominant. They're dominant in the ladies. They've gone for five in a row next year. They were very unlucky. Thankfully, they didn't win the under-20s, because it's creating a two-tier system. It's them and us, and they're going to at some stage, Brendan. Whether it's the Donegals or the Mayos or the Currys or the Tyrones in this world that dethrone them, they are going to lose at some stage, and then that's the time. That's the time that one of us needs to be there when it happens. Again, from a Donegal perspective and my own perspective, proud football traditions. It's what we continue to live for, and it'll keep us going. And it was great to have football, but that's the most important thing. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyone that talked from hurling to football in the last 12 weeks, I don't think they realise what they've done for us as a country, as a community, and as GAA people. Just sitting down watching television, when there's something on at a certain time, it really brought a light into many a household that we've all seen dark times over the last 12, 14 weeks and the last 8 months. So they deserve great credit. And I, for one, look, I enjoyed every single bit of it from the start to the end. And it's great that it's starting again now. And what is it?
That's it. There's no time to wait, David. And along with that, Shane, the light, you did a lot of brilliant work in the lockdown as well with your calls to people at home and the elderly and that. And I want to commend you on that there. Fair play to you, David. You're a mighty GAA man and a great man with it. And again, thanks a million for joining us on the DL Debate. And credit to all the good work that you did in the lockdown. May the lockdown end soon.
Yes, exactly. And I tell you this, Brendan, I had some of the nicest calls that I had with Donegal people. And but just if they know one thing, they know a lot more than me about football. It was a pleasure.
Mighty stuff. Fair play to you, David. Legend.
See you, Brendan, buddy.
Talk to you soon, sir.
Take care. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you. And finally, commiserations to our minors who come up short by the narrowest of margins to Tyrone at the weekend. Very difficult for any team preparing for a championship game now. As I said, that's it now until February 27th when the league resumes. The championship next year will have a backdoor element there, with the final being pulled forward to July 18th. And in the National League, there'll be a northern section featuring Donegal, Armagh, Tyrone and Monaghan. So that's the final wrap of the year for 2020. I want to thank Kenneth so much for his patience and guiding me through the year, producing the shows here at Highland Radio and the DL Debate. I want to wish everybody a happy and safe Christmas. The show will be back in February, and we want to wish you a prosperous 2021.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love in Sarah's Kitchen.